So thank you very much. And let me thank the organizers for the invitation. And I consider it a great honor because I started to work on this subject 1.5 years ago. And in the previous 10 years, I was working on integrable models. So now I would like to share my point of view as the one who were working on integrable two-dimensional quantum field theories, how I see this ADS-CFT from this point of view. So let me just borrow the logo of the conference and let me give my interpretation. So on, on one side, you have gauge theory, and on the other side, you have this string theory on this background. And there is this spin chain which interpolates between this gauge theory and string theory. And for me, these spin chains means integrability. So I would like to use integrability to describe this whole theory. So I am not going to go into the details of either gauge theory or string theory, but I will consider as an integrable model. So let me show my logo. It's not so nice, I know, but it's more useful for me. So I will use this map, that's sort of motivation. So I would like to describe this ADS-CFT integrable model in this G and the J, and first I would like to emphasize a sort of motivation that we would like to really solve this system in finite volume for finite J. So I introduce for you how we solve two-dimensional integrable theories exactly in finite volume. And I will show on the example of the Li-Yang, Singe-Gordon, and Sine-Gordon model. And in parallel, by step, I also show the developments on this ADS-CFT side. So I will have this map where I have G the coupling and J is somehow the volume. And if G is very, very large, say infinite, then we have classical string theory. As we decrease G, then we go to the semi-classical regime. Then we have to include string loop correction, and finally this domain is the quantum string theory. On the other side, if you go from V-coupling, then you have, say, one loop perturbative gauge theory, then you include loop correction, then you obtain a non-perturbative gauge theory. And and you would like to see that this ADS correspondence is valid, that this quantum string theory is equivalent to this non-perturbative gauge theory. And of course, you have to compare two very complicated objects, and the way you are able to do this is integrability. So if you first go to very, very large J, like J to infinity, then you observe that the S matrix, what you would calculate in this side and this side is the same, then you start to believe that this theory is really integrable. Then you start to calculate the leading finite size correction, which is the asymptotic beta ansatz, and they agree. Then you go to the wrapping correction, and they also agree. Then you would like to go beyond and describe really for any value of this volume J. So that's the motivation, and let's see what is the plan of the talk. So I will start the classical version. And I will use the example of the Sine-Gordon theory to introduce this classical Sine-Gordon theory, and I will compare with classical, make the analogy with classical string theory on this background. Then I will go into some details how you could quantize this theory. Then I will just set up this bootstrap approach to quantum integrable models and explain the scattering matrix. Then I will explain how you can calculate actually the matrix part and the scalar part. The matrix part comes from the symmetry, and the scalar part somehow contains the physical information, which contains the bond states and anomalous thresholds. Then I will put this whole system in finite volume. The volume will be large first, and I describe this asymptotic beta ansatz. Then I will decrease the volume and analyze the Lüscher correction. Then I will go into some details of the derivation of the ground state TBE equation, both in this Sine-Gordon, Singe-Gordon, and also in the ADS case. Then I will talk about excited TBE equation, Y system, and some nonlinear integral equation for these models, I mean for the relativistic case like the sine Gordon. And finally, I will conclude. So let's start with the classical sine Gordon theory or the Sinch Gordon theory. They are the analytical continuation of each other. So if you just take a look at the sine Gordon Lagrangian, you have some kinetic piece and you have a potential, and this potential is periodic in beta phi, so the target space somehow is just a circle. But if you analytically continue, you obtain a theory which instead cosine will have cosine hyperbolic and the target space is the real line. So we would like to analyze this very simple theory in finite volume. So first focus on the sine Gordon theory. What are you determine the finite energy classical solutions. So you find soliton, antisoliton, and some breeders, and you can boost up all these solutions. So they correspond to particles, and you will have moving particles. Then you would like to see that this theory is integrable. How do you do this? First, you find some flat connection, which depends on some parameter. Then you can introduce this monodromy matrix, and because this connection is flat, then you will see that the time evolution, just the similarity transformation. So if you take the trace and you expand in mu, then you will have infinite number of conserved charges. So this exactly proves the integrability of this classical theory. Once you calculate, you will see the energy, momentum, and you can see higher spin charges for any odd integers. And also what is very interesting thing, because you have these infinite charges and you analyze some finite energy configuration and you move goes with t to minus infinity, then you will see that it consists of particles with different velocities. Then you take the same solution, go to t plus infinity, then you will see that exactly the same particles, but here the fastest was on the left. It will be here on the right. And if you see what happened with this solution, you will see nothing else, but they experience some time delays. Then you analyze these time delays, and you will see that these time delays is just the sum of these individual time delays, this experience scattering on all these constituents. So this is somehow the classical analog of the factorized scattering I will introduce later. So that's the sine Gordon theory, and we could ask, what is the analog in this ADS? So the ADS is more complicated theory, and it was introduced nicely in the talk of Kostya Zarembo. So please recall his talk now. And there is a vast literature on the classical solution, not like soliton, antisoliton, breeders, much more solutions. So I don't want to go into the details now, but I would like to emphasize the integrability, which is really proved. So because this is this super coset, you can also introduce a flat connection, which depends on this parameter. So the similar trick, just using the monodromy matrix, taking the trace and expanding mu will give infinite number of conserved charges. So the the integrability is proved classically. Now we can ask, how can we go beyond this classical? How can we quantize this theory? Can we prove quantum integrability or not? So let's see the sine Gordon theory because it's simpler. So when you would like to quantize, you have to choose a scheme. So this means you separate your Lagrangian in two pieces and you quantize one of them and analyze the rest as a perturbation. So you have several choices. There are two nice choices, say. In the first choice, you say you just pick up the kinetic term as the free part, what you solve exactly. So it's a conformal field theory that you can quantize. And what is nice in this description, then this perturbation has a definite scaling dimension. So the coupling has a definite dimension and also this operator. So it's useful in this respect. But you can do something else. You can take this beta goes to zero. Then you see that the leading part is just the free theory and the rest is the... This is some of the perturbation. And if you want to scale, this is similar to what you can do with sigma models. You can scale out actually beta, and you see this is like 1 over h bar. So the beta goes to zero limit is somehow like the semi-classical or classical limit. So the free theory is the classical limit. Now, you take, say, this description and let the question, what can you do with this? And it's very nice because you can prove quantum integrability. So how do you prove it? So you just take this conformal phase theory and you know that the energy momentum tensor and the differential polynomials of the energy momentum tensor depends just on one of these large variables, x plus. So in the conformal limit, when you don't have this perturbation, lambda goes to zero, then you have, this is a conservation law, say. And you are asking how it is modified in perturbation theory. So you can calculate perturbative corrections. If you are lucky, it's D plus something. Then you would calculate, so that's the one-order correction, then lambda square, and so on. But I told you that lambda has a definite scaling dimensions. And in the generic case, in the Sine-Gordon theory, you would, the left-hand side also has a definite scaling dimension. So you could ask what sort of operator could I just multiply lambda square. You've calculated the dimension and you realize there is no such an operator. So the first order perturbation theory is exact, and the first order perturbation theory, it's easy to show whether you have infinite number of charges or not. And you have. So the Sine-Gordon, the integrability of the Sine-Gordon theory is proved in this business, in this scheme. It's also nice because you can figure out what are the non-local symmetries. Then you can use this other scheme, and you define the correlators of this Sine-Gordon theory, say, in a perturbative expansion. You see what is the dispersion relation of the asymptotic states. You can define the scattering matrix connecting asymptotic states. You can connect with the correlators with this LSA formula. Then you can prove for the scattering matrix unitarity, crossing symmetry, analyticity, and so on. So now the tactic is the following. For this quantum Sine-Gordon theory, we know it is integrable. We know what are these asymptotic states. S matrix connects them. And these are the requirements from the S matrix. And in the bootstrap scheme, you just postulate all these requirements and try to find the solutions. But before doing this, let me just mention that do we have quantum integrability in the ADS? And there is no proof yet. You can see there are perturbative indications, but compared to this other developments in relativistic two-dimensional theories, there is no proof yet. So there is one point which is missing, and it would be nice to if somebody could prove it. So let me go now to the bootstrap program. So as I said, we postulate certain requirements on the scattering matrix. So what is the scattering matrix? So you have some asymptotic states, which contains of particles with different momenta. You order in some initial state in some way. They are representations of the global symmetry, which contains the Lorentz symmetry, so you know the dispersion relation of these particles. And actually, how you calculate the full momentum energy or the charges, you use the coproduct to evaluate this charge on the multiparticle states. And the scattering matrix, which connects initial and final states, it must have this symmetry, so it has to commute with the coproduct of the charges. And recall Coriolis talk about this issue. So the scattering matrix has to commute with this symmetry. And also because you have infinite number of charges, the scattering matrix of a multiparticle scattering will factorize in the individual two-particle scatterings. If you just take a three-particle-to-three-particle scattering, then you will see you can write it two different ways, and this gives a very non-trivial equation, what is called the Young-Boxter equation for the color structure of the scatterings. So basically, your scattering matrix has some matrix structure which tells you how the colors of these particles are changing in the scattering, and it also has a scalar part. And I'm saying that this requirement that it commutes with the charges and the Young-Boxter equation usually fixes the matrix part. And you have to fix also the scalar part, and you fix the scalar part from unitarity and crossing symmetry. Finally, you must have a consistent theory. This means that all poles of the scattering matrix must have physical origin. So they should correspond either to bound states or anomalous thresholds. So this is the Bootstrap program, and let's see how we can apply this Bootstrap program in the simplest possible case when you don't have a matrix structure, just one particle, and let's see how can you calculate the scattering matrix. So in this relativistic theory, if you introduce this rapidity variable, then the scattering matrix depends only on the rapidities, that's relativistic invariance, and it must satisfy these two functional relations. And also, we have to explain the poles. So what is the simplest solution? The simplest solution is just S equals 1. That's the free boson. So it's, we developed a complicated picture to solve such an easy theory. But you can also, any time, you can add the CDD factor, which satisfies these two requirements, and multiply the scattering matrix. And you can ask, what is the theory behind this scattering matrix? And it's not obvious to figure out, but that's the Sinch-Gordon theory, if you remember, when I analytically continued the potential. And that's the relation. So this described the scattering of this particle in the Sinch-Gordon theory. Then you analyze the analytic structure, and you see that because P is larger than zero, then you don't have any pole in the physical strip, so it's a well-defined theory. But then you can ask what happens if P is smaller than zero. Then you see that you have a pole. So what can you do? You associate a particle for this pole, so at this particular rapidity in the scattering process, you create a new particle. Then because you have factorization and integrability, you can calculate the scattering of this original particle on this bond state. You would like to calculate this, and you can do by shifting the trajectory. So you can express this new scattering matrix in terms of this old one. And you can ask the question, whether it's really a new particle. And if this parameter P is 2/3 in this language, then it's not a new particle, it's just this old particle. And in this case, you explained all the poles of the scattering matrix because you say that the pole is just this old particle, this one unique particle. And this theory is the Liang theory. It has just one particle which has a self-using pole. But if this P is not 2/3, then you have to include another particle. Here is the analytic structure. The physical strip is between 0 and I pi, and this is the analytical structure of this one type particle scattering. So you have one pole at I pi p, another in this crossing symmetric point. Then you, as I said, you have to associate to the pole, if this p is not 2/3, to another particle, B2. Then you analyze the pole structure of this scattering, and you find another pole. So you introduce another particle, and so on and so forth, until you see this is the middle line of the physical strip. And if you hit this point, then this idea of introducing new particles doesn't work anymore. So this is not a consistent theory. We cannot explain all the poles. After, when we reach the border in certain sense of the physical strip, then we got trouble. Why we got trouble? The problem is, you see, because this is the Sinch-Gordon theory, so if I continue P to minus P, this is the Sinh-Gordon theory. And we know that in the Sinh-Gordon theory, there are solitons, and in this Bootstrap picture, we didn't include the solitons. So we have to go back and do this whole Bootstrap procedure with the solitons. So we go back, and we say, now I'm analyzing the Sinh-Gordon with the doublet of soliton and antisoliton, and this scattering matrix has now a matrix structure and a scalar structure. Let's fix the matrix structure. The matrix structure is fixed from symmetry, from representation theory. So you know what are the global charges, then you ask what is the scattering matrix which commutes with this charge. Then you calculate it, and you see this is really uniquely fixed, the matrix part, modulo some scalar factor, what you fix from unitarity and crossing symmetry. So there is a unique choice, modulo some CDD factor, but let's take the simplest possible one. So by this way, the theory is solved. Now you go and explain the pole structure, because you know maximal analyticity means that you have to explain all the poles. So you look for the poles, and what you see, there are lots of poles, but each of them can be explained by some breeder type particles. This is the physical strip, so you go from 1 to 1 over P. Then from the Bootstrap, you can calculate what is the scattering, say, of the first pole, B1, with itself. And you see that it's exactly the same what we calculated in the previous slide if we make this identification. Then you analyze all the other poles. Then you can visit back the poles of the breeders, what you couldn't explain because you were at the border of this physical strip, and you see if they exchange solitons in this diagram, then it gives an explanation of this pole. So finally, you explained all the poles, and the theory is solved in this bootstrap sense. So this is the way you solve the Sine-Gordon theory. And let's go now and see how we solve ADS. So we are on this ADS map, and we are at J equals infinity in the S matrix case, and we would like to calculate the scattering matrix. As I told you, it has a matrix structure and a scalar part. So matrix structure is fixed by the symmetry. So what you do, you look for global symmetries. You see that it's PSU, this 2-2 square. So this fundamental particle whose scattering matrix we are looking for is in this Q equals 1 atypical representation for 1SU2, so it's 2 boson, 2 fermion. Then you demand this symmetry, and you got some 16 by 16 scattering matrix. These are the non-zero elements which were given in Sergei's talk, you have to recall. Now you would like to fix the scalar part. And you use unitarity, crossing symmetry, and you can fix it. But let me emphasize now that somehow what is important that the matrix part contains information about the symmetry. So it's the mathematical part, I should say, of the scattering matrix. But the scalar part is the physical part. And you might remember how difficult it was really to figure out this dressing phase and this factor. And it really contains all the information of physics. And it took much more time after you fix the matrix part to figure out what is really the scalar part. So that's the physical input. Then you have to analyze, actually, the pole structure. And as I said, you have to explain all the poles on the physical strip. But the problem is that we don't know what is the physical strip. So if you remember Sergei's talk, he also emphasized that there is some uniformizing variable Z, which can be used to write in a dispersion relation in a nice way. But we don't really know what is the physical strip. So how can we explain all the poles? We found some poles. We realized that there are bond states for any atypical representation. But since we don't know where is the border, when we could get trouble, we don't know whether we need any more particle or not. What we do, we suppose we don't need more, and we develop the subject further until we got some trouble. Then we come back, and we might need to include some more particles. So this is one point which is not cleared up yet. So this finishes somehow the infinite volume solution of the problem, and now I would like to go into finite volume. So I put my two-dimensional integrable quantum field theory in finite volume. I take a multiparticle state with certain rapidities, and this is how a typical spectrum looks like. So as I said, this very infinite volume is the S-matrix domain. Then if I smaller volume, this is described what we call beta Young. Then here you have, this is the polynomial correction in the inverse of the volume. These are the exponential small correction. And this is the conformal field theory region. So this is a typical spectrum in finite volume of a integrable quantum field theory. So I focus on the beta Young domain now. So the infinite volume energy spectrum is just the sum of these individual energies. But if I'm in finite volume, then the momentum values are quantized. And in the quantization, I have to take into account all the other momenta, and I have to calculate them self-consistently. So if I just take one particle, move around the circle, and demand the periodicity of its wave function, this gives this equation, because any time I cross another particle, I pick up the phase of the scattering matrix. There is a standard way of writing it. Usually you have just one, because it's periodic, and you scatter all the other particles. But I included the scattering with itself because the S matrix at zero rapidity is minus one. So this is a Betanzos way of writing this momentum quantization condition. You can take the log, and this will determine you this momentum in terms of the scattering matrix. What is interesting, if you take the volume very, very large, then these quantization conditions are very, very dense, and in a multiparticle state, some of them are occupied and some others are empty. But because this property of this fermionic property of the scattering matrix, you cannot occupy more than once. So it's like a fermionic system. Okay? What is the difference? This is valid for a diagonal theory. In a non-diagonal theory, this matrix, you have the doublet of soliton, antisoliton, so it's a really matrix. So when you move around this particle, so it's some color structure, say up and down, up is the soliton, down is the antisoliton, so you make this run, then you really have to use the matrix structure. So you have to diagonalize the product of these S matrices. This is what is called the transfer matrix. And if you analyze this transfer matrix, it's nothing but the transfer matrix of an XXZ spin chain with some inhomogeneities. So you really have to diagonalize this transfer matrix, take the eigenvalue, and plug back to this equation, and this will give you the same quantization condition for these rapidities or the momentum. So let me emphasize, if you have any quantum integrable quantum field theory with non-diagonal scattering, then in the large volume beta Young region, you always have to diagonalize a spin chain. So quantum field theory in large volume is somehow multiparticle states is equivalent to the spin chain. And there is a nice way of diagonalizing this XXE Hamiltonian, and the way is, this is the transfer matrix, and you know you would like to need the eigenvalues, and there is a nice relation with these functions, which helps you to write this nested beta. This is called this nested beta ansatz, because this is the first beta ansatz for this theta, and there are some other degrees of freedom, which tells you which eigenvalue you have to pick up of this transfer matrix, and this is determined from these equations. The notation is that plus plus means double shift in I pi half. The same what Volodya was using. So that's the sine Gordon, and let's go to this ADS. So we are in this asymptotic beta ansatz region. So I put this ADS particles in finite volume. I have to change the dispersion relation. It's not a relativistic one. But the same way, because it has some color structure, it has actually (2/2). So you have one index with 2/2 and the red one, say, and the green one is another 2/2. And you have to diagonalize this transfer matrix. And let me just show all of them. So this is exactly this asymptotic beta ansatz or Bayesert-Staudacher equations when you take this quantum field theory somehow and you calculate the spectrum in a large volume. I said it's always a spin chain. And you can even look up which spin chain in this CondMat literature. It's a Hubbard spin chain with inhomogeneities. So there is a nice way of writing this beta ansatz equation if you introduce this transfer matrix. So you have the transfer matrix and this T dot, and you have to diagonalize it. And you have some nested levels and the same function what you already got familiar in yesterday's talks. So this is the way this Bayesert-Staudacher equation appears in this two-dimensional quantum integrable quantum field theory business for a theory for very large volume. Now let's move further to smaller volume, and we calculate the exponentially small correction, what are called the Lüscher correction. So we are in the Lüscher domain. And Lüscher originally analyzed the mass correction of one standing particle. And he recognized that there are two terms which has the following physical meaning. So you have one particle in finite volume, and there is a virtual process in which this particle can decay to other particles. They travel all over the world and fuse back on the other side. So this is a virtual diagram, vacuum polarization, which will contribute its energy, that is, to its mass. So this is this term. The contribution is this term. And there is another term in which from this finite size vacuum, two virtual particles and the particle and an antiparticle appears from the vacuum, and one travels around the world and annihilates on the other side. But in the meantime, it scatters on these particle states, and this is the contribution. This is what is called the F-term contribution. And if you can see that this guy is just the residue, that the mu-term contribution is always the residue of the F-term contribution. So these are the leading finite size correction of a one particle state. Then you can ask what are the leading finite size correction of multi-particle states. Then you remember you take, a free particle state, they scatter on each other. So first of, because they have some color structure, you have to diagonalize the transfer matrix first. You pick up some certain state by choosing which eigenvalue I'm interested in. Then this is this eigenvalue of the transfer matrix. And we manage to write the correction, a similar Lüscher correction, in terms of this transfer matrix. So there are two sorts of corrections. One correction which comes from the modification of this beta ansatz equation. So if you take the logarithm of this equation, this was this beta Young or asymptotic beta ansatz equation, and you have to add the term, and this term can be written in terms of this transfer matrix. You see you differentiate here with respect to this P, and also P here, psi can also depend on psi. On P. So you take these derivatives, let me just, and then there is another source. So in the energy, you have to take into account how the momentum is shifted by this correction, and you have to take into account the vacuum polarization of these particles, like here, and this is also can be written in terms of the transfer matrix. So this is the And I presented here only the F terms, but if the model has this composite structure, so a particle can decay, then you also have to include the residues of this term, so-called mu terms. Let's see how it goes in the ADS business. So we are calculating the Lüscher or wrapping correction in this case. So let's see the one particle correction. And I just show in red what is the difference. So basically, you have the same physical pictures. You have to use the mirror dispersion relation here, and you have to include this factor. So that's the difference. There is also an F term and the mu term. But what is more interesting, and let me just explain on the two-particle case, that if you take two particles, and like the Konishi, and would like to calculate the asymptotic beta ansatz, then you can do it in terms of the transfer matrix. Then you are interested in this finite size correction. And as Romuald explained in this last talk, there is a correction in the beta ansatz, but this correction cannot be written in terms of the transfer matrix. At least we couldn't manage to write in this term in this way, but we could manage to write only as a derivative of the scattering matrix with respect to this variable. In this other case, you could put, because it was the S matrix was in a difference form, you could put this derivative to the other side. And then it is in terms of the transfer matrix, but not here in this case. Okay, and there is a modification of the energy. And the last talk, or the previous talk you heard, was exactly about this, applying for this Konishi operator. So let me go now further, and let me try to solve the theories really in finite volume. So I would like to calculate now first the ground state energy exactly in a finite volume system. So this is the typical spectrum, and I try to calculate just the ground state energy. So the idea, as was explained several times in this conference, but let me just tell you again. So you calculate the partition function. So you take your system and you evolve in Euclidean time for very, very large time, and you know that the partition function is dominated by the ground state energy. So if I can calculate some way the partition function, then I will have access to the ground state energy. So the idea is the following. In this Euclidean theory, you can exchange space and Euclidean time. So basically, you turn your head, and instead of going this as Euclidean time, you will consider this other direction as Euclidean time, and this is space. But as you are interested in the R goes to infinite limit, you are in this other mirror theory. Your volume is very large, so the beta Young quantization condition gives a proper description. So we have a good control over the spectrum. And you remember, if the volume is very large, then you have a density of particles, and there are other density of other quantization conditions which are not filled. Thank you. So you would like to somehow calculate the partition function in the large volume limit. So you introduce these densities, you introduce the holes, and you write the energy in terms of the densities, and you take these beta ansatz or beta Young quantization conditions, and you can make relation by this between the densities and the hole densities. And you calculate the partition function, which contains the energy and this entropy factor, and you would like to calculate the R goes to infinite limit, and you do it by saddle point method. So you calculate the saddle point, and it's described by this pseudo-energy, and you obtain this TBE equation, as you have already seen. This was a very simple theory with just one particle, so this equation is valid for the Li-Young or Sirge-Gondon or any theory which has just one particle and diagonal scattering. Let's see how it goes in the non-diagonal case. So the basic idea is the same. What is different? Because you have these color degrees of freedom, you don't have only the particle momenta like these blue guys, but you also have to care of the color degrees of freedom, which the beta roots coming from diagonalizing these XXZ spin chains. So you have to introduce densities also for these guys. And in this case, actually, I have to mention that there is some periodicity in this direction, because you remember this Q was the sine hyperbolic lambda or something. So in the imaginary direction, you have some periodicity, and you have some root configuration. And this is the string hypothesis, actually, how you figure out how these roots condense in the large volume limit. So once you know how they condense, you introduce some densities of these strings, and you calculate somehow how they are affected, how they affect these densities each others. This is somehow the fused scattering matrix. So you can calculate these kernels from the beta equations. Then you take the partition functions, and in this case, these beta roots, what so-called magnons, do not contribute, only this massive guy, the momentum guy. So this is what you put into the energy. Then you take the entropy factor, minimize with respect to all possible densities. So you use pseudo-energies for this color degrees of freedom and also for the particles. And finally, you obtain a TBE equation, which are coupled equations between these densities. So what is, it's a bit ugly actually here, because I said there is some periodicity structure. So depending on what is P, the number of independent densities varies. And that's very, really ugly. But this is the final equation. And let me tell you that technically, nothing really different for this ADS case. So now we would like to do a ground state TBA in this ADS business, so solve somewhere in the ground state inside for any volume. So what is different is the dispersion relation is different, and also this is not relativistically invariant. I mean, it's not symmetric if you somehow exchange E and P. So when you calculate the partition function in this channel, and this is the time evolution operator, what you would calculate from the Euclidean path integral, but if you turn your head, then you see that this Hamiltonian is a different one. So you have to use a mirror Hamiltonian in this case. This is one difference. And also the roots, technically, you have to calculate how the strings, this is the string hypothesis, how the strings arrange themselves in the large volume limit. So you introduce densities for all strings. You know you have infinite bond states. For each bond state, you also use a density. Then you plug back. They contribute to the energy. Then you use this Bezier-Staudacher equation in the mirror theory, actually. And you calculate how these densities somehow scatter on each other. This is this kernel. And then you plug back to the partition function, entropy factor and energy factor, and you minimize it, and you got this TBE equation in this ADS case. It's technically like the Sine-Gordon, just the kernels are much more involved, and you don't really have a periodicity in this direction.
Can you comment on the context of
if I just take this ordinary equation, I see, okay. This ordinary beta Young equation is already valid for integer L. But when you do this TBA trick, you use the mirror, and in the mirror, P tilde is not quantized. No, I cannot. I mean, it's the same equation what Sergei was analyzing, so, and his analysis is correct. So I think it's the same applies. But from the Bayesert-Staudacher equation, it should be quantized already. No? So if you say you know the dispersion relation, you know the dispersion relation, you know P should be between minus P and P, and that the Bayesert or this asymptotic beta-ansatz equation is well-defined only if L is integer. So it's I can see the integerness of L already from the multiparticle asymptotic beta ansatz. I don't have to go to TBA. But I think L should be integer, yes. I agree. Okay, so let me go on. Let me just move to the last point, excited states. So we would like to describe excited states now. And I will just recall these two simplest theory, the Singh-Gordon and the Li-Yang, and I quickly compare these two. So what is the best method, actually, to describe excited states at finite size? The perfect method when you have a lattice regularization of your system. Singh-Gordon has a lattice regularization. You solve this lattice theory completely, you take the continuum limit, and you have a complete control over all the excited states at any volume. And what comes out is the following. So I'm analyzing the Singh-Gordon theory. You remember no bond states, just one type of particles. So these are the ground state TBA equation. You remember there was this ML cosine, or it was just some energy term, and there was this convolution term. And if I compare this equation, the ground state equation, with the excited state equation, then you have to include some source term, here also in the pseudo-energy and also in the energy. And the source term corresponds to the singularities, log singularities of this 1 plus e to the minus epsilon, which sometimes you can use this y function. Okay. What comes out from the lattice? Because it's somehow this is always the case, that these rapidities, these theta j rapidities, are sitting at I pi half. So they have imaginary part I pi half and can have any real part, which you determine from this equation, but the imaginary part of is fixed. So there is some C, say, on the lattice of which is somehow the ground state, and if you just excite, move out one guy, gives an excited state in this picture. Now let's see what is the difference compared to the Li-Yang. In the Li-Yang case, it was obtained by some analytic continuation, so you take, say, the ground state TBA equation, like it's exactly the same, but different scattering matrix, that's the Li-Yang, and this is the Singh-Gordon. So you take analytic continuation in the volume, and you could see that the source term are these guys. Exactly, you see the same form, like here, but they are double. So instead of being at I pi half, half of them, it's I pi over 6, and anytime you have another one. But what is changing, actually, if you move to finite volume, here they stay at I pi half, but here, in this case, they start to move, say, to the real X. And what Romuald was mentioning, that if the volume goes very, very small, it can happen that two roots, which describe one particle state, will go to the real line and split there. So that's a completely different root configuration in finite volume than in infinite volume. In the Singh-Gordon, it cannot happen. Now you can take both equation. Actually, you can do the following. Instead of having this source term, you could have this source term, like here, for the Li-Yang model. And you analyze the large volume correction, the Lüscher correction, and you see that the F term of the Lüscher correction are correct, but not the mu terms. So somehow that these guys are composite, it corresponds that they have mu terms. So if I'm, let me conclude in some way. If you put back the wrong source terms, then your half part of the Lüscher correction is exponentially small. So the half part, the F term of the Lüscher correction is the same. Only the mu term of the Lüscher correction is different. So the difference between a good source term and the wrong source term is exponentially small. So maybe you can't see in the numerics. Okay? That is a very nice thing. So because this Li-Yang scattering matrix, it satisfies this bootstrap equation. You remember if you take this particle and you calculate, it has a bond state, a self-fusing pole. So that's why the scattering matrix satisfies this fusion equation. And this means that this y function, what you define from epsilon solution of this equation, satisfies the y system relation like this. And if you know the analytic structure of the y function, like say for ground state, you don't have any pole in the physical strip, then you can solve this equation and you obtain back the TB equation. So I'm saying that if you have a y system and you know completely the analytic structure, it is equivalent to this TB equations. Somehow this is similar like what I already mentioned. You fix the matrix part of the problem from mathematics, from the group theory. But the scalar part has to be fixed from physics, from analytic structure. And here this, the same for excited state. The Y system is the mathematical part, what comes out just from the symmetry. But the physics you have to plug in is the analytic structure. So this is really hard work, as hard, maybe even harder, how it was figured out the scalar part in this ADS business, it will be more difficult to figure out the analytic structure of all the excited states. So let me just comment in the Y system in this ADS case. So let me just go to the Y system in the Sine-Gordon theory very quickly. So you can encode the Y system in a diagram. And you encode such a way that you take one node, you label some nodes, and you shift plus, minus, then it has I plus Y on the left and the right, which is governed by the incidence matrix of the diagram. So the Sine-Gordon, if P is some irrational, it's an infinite Y system. If P is finite, integer, then then you have such a closed Y system. But it really varies from P to P. And this is an infinite Y system. And you can ask, can I use this infinite Y system to obtain some integral equation? And indeed, if you figure out the analytic structure from, say, from the Lüscher correction, you plug back to this Y system, you will have integral equation. But you have to do from states to states, and it's very difficult, and it's not sure that you covered all the cases. But there is a much nicer approach. Again, there is an integrable lattice realization of the Sine-Gordon theory. So you can take the Sine-Gordon scattering matrix and define some spin chain or lattice model by putting the scattering matrix at each side, some alternating inhomogeneities. So the claim is that this provides an integrable lattice realization of the Sine-Gordon theory. So instead of this very long infinite or this ugly Y system and TB equation, you can derive from the lattice one single integral equation, what is called the NLI equation, from the lattice. And again, like in the Sine-Gordon case, lattice gives all the control, gives all possible source terms, and gives a complete description of this theory. So what about ADS? In the ADS, we are at the level of the Y system. Now we know the Y system. It's beautiful. The problem is that the Y system is so general, so it's valid for any state. Even I think it's valid if you have boundaries in the Y system, but you have to fill in with the analytic structure. You can try the Lüscher correction and figure out the analytic structure. It's a good start. Once you have the analytic structure, you turn excited state TBA equation, and this is you could see yesterday's talk. But there are new mutterms. Maybe it's correct. I don't know. But I think you have to really check it. I mean, you have to take your excited state TBA equation, and you have to make an analytic expansion for small coupling or large volume, and you have to compare analytically, say, with the five-loop Konishi, and if it's correct, then probably there are really no mutterms. But then this just one state. So I think if you would like to really solve this ADS-CFT correspondence, then you have to figure out a lattice, integrable lattice realization of the problem. So I conclude. So I moved in this map from right to the left, and I tried to show how this solution of two-dimensional integrable models can be implemented in this ADS-CFT business. And there is one point I would like to stress once more. When we calculated from the bootstrap the S matrix, there was the matrix part, which is representation theory and this mathematics, and the scalar part was the physics input. It's much harder to calculate, and it's not completed lab because the physical sheet is not known. Analogously, you have the Y system, which is varied for any excited state. This is the representation theory, the mathematics, and you have to fill in the physical input, the analytic structure, and once you do, you somehow solve the theory. But even this solution is not very nice because you have infinite functions. But once you could figure out an integrable lattice realization, then you will have a finite number of functions and a complete control. So let me just go back to this logo of the conference. I modified a bit. So I agree that there is a connection from gauge theory to string theory, and it should be a spin chain or more. But what sort of spin chain? It has to be an integrable lattice realization of this ADS. And I think in two more years, then one, at least somebody could figure out such a thing. So thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions, comments?
So let me just get this on record. So from your point of view, you would argue that the complete spectrum for any operator in ADS-CFT was not yet found.
It is not yet found.
Okay, another question there.
Who? So the reason that you're telling it's not found because there are these mutterms, right?
No. Because you have to really know the analytic structure of the Y function for any state.
But that's related to the mutterms.
Not only mutterms. I mean, if the analytic structure tells you where are the singularities, I mean, if this is not just one singularity, but more composite singularities, this means mutterms. But if you could really fix all the singularities of all the Y function for all states, then I think you solve the full spectrum of the theory. If you fix just one singularity of one state, or I mean, if you take one state and you can figure out the singularity, then you solved partly the problem. But you have to really check that you figured out the proper singularities. And there, you need lots of checks.
The complete answer would be the plot of all states, but of course it's not doable in...
I'm saying it's doable, but maybe the Y system is not the right way of doing it. You have to find the lattice realization of the problem.
At least for sigma model, we managed to figure out the analytical properties for a broad class of states.
Yes, but not all of them, I think. A broad class of states, but not all of them.
Okay, Volodya.
Why do you insist on the lattice formulation? It might be even difficult in this situation. Like we know in principal chiral field, it's not so easy.
It's extremely difficult, yes.
But on the other hand, if we construct the DDV type, Destre de Vega type equation in the spirit as we did for SU2 principal chiral field, isn't it enough? Then we understand really the whole...
No, because you have to put source term also into this equation.
But we know how to do it. In principle, you think we don't have the description of all the states in principal chiral field?
Yeah, I think you don't have for all the states. You have for a broad cast of states.
What kind
but
of states
not all
did
states.
We miss? What kind of states did we miss?
That the queue is not real.
What?
The queue. I mean, there was you had this queue, and maybe it's not real.
No, I mean principal chiral field.
Yeah,
principle.
I mean principal chiral field.
Queue is not real.
Queue.
Ah,
capital
I see,
Q.
I see. When they can form some bound states, the root, the physical roots.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe.
What are really the analytical structures? From latest model, it doesn't answer this question. I think it
will answer. If you go to Sine-Gordon, say, in the Sine-Gordon case, you have a complete classification of all the source terms. You know there are wide roots, closed roots, self-conjugate roots, and you know all the possible root configurations.
No, at least in Sine-Gordon, I don't know. There are these wide roots.
That's Sine-Gordon. Yeah,
okay.
there are wide roots.
Then I don't know many types of roots, and it's not clear which ones you can include, which ones you can't.
No, it's completely clear. Ask Francesco Ravanini, and he will tell you.
Okay.
So on that note, I think we should finish. We will resume at 3:00 with Akani Hamed and McLaughlin, and let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you very much.